Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi and welcome. This is Rabbi Michael Katz with you. Here we are on Judaism 101.9. Great to be together with you on this wet, rainy sort of afternoon here in the Highveld. It is beautiful to be in your company. And perhaps we can spend the next 45 minutes or so thinking about things Jewish, things that are coming up, things that happened around about this time in Jewish history, and some important lessons and messages that we can take from that and from the time that we're in and from this now sort of transition from Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Shmini Atzeres, Simchas Torah, and Parshas Bereishis through to the coming couple of months before the end of the secular year and kind of the wind down here where everybody is focusing on or thinking about where they're going to be in December, what they're going to do during the holidays and so on. It's that time of the year. It's amazing. We're cruising closer by the second to November. Then it's December. And one looks back and thinks, where has this last secular year gone? Where has time faded into oblivion? And we're now exactly 2 weeks the other side of all the Yomim Tovim already. It's amazing that it's actually been that quick and that fast that all of these things have passed us by. But we can allow everything to pass us by, or we can take a look at it and think about what we've got to know about it, the divine providence behind everything, how it affects us, what we need to take on board, what we should be learning from the time that seems to pass us by and from all the events that happen at these times, because surely that is part and parcel of being Jewish. So let's look at this day in history. If we go back to the Second Temple era around about 230 years before the Common Era, so we're going back 2,255 years approximately. The 7th of Cheshvan, which is today, was the date on which the most distant Jew from the Temple, in geographical terms, who would reside on the banks of the Euphrates River, it would take them 15 days to get home after the Yom Tov. Now, that's where we are. We said 2 weeks after the Chag, a 15-day journey from a distance from Jerusalem. They would arrive home and return home after being for the Regel, for the Chag, for the festival of Sukkot. They would have been in Jerusalem. And it was therefore incumbent upon all Jews everywhere to delay, and particularly in the land of Israel, to delay imploring God for rain until this day. We didn't want to be asking for rain on the day or at a time when some of our brethren would still be traveling home. Now, it wasn't kind of a waterproof travels that they had in those days. They didn't get into an aeroplane or into any covered vehicle in order to travel. They were exposed to the elements, and therefore rain, and especially, I guess, in that kind of a neighborhood where it can become extremely difficult to traverse the rivers and extremely difficult for the camels and the animals to walk through a desert that was flooded, if that happened along the way, people would delay till Zayin Cheshvan, till the 7th of Cheshvan. Today, it marked the return of everybody to their daily activities following the spiritually rich festival period of Tishrei, and therefore this was the day on which prayers began in earnest, imploring God to send the rains. Now, yes, on Shmini Atzeret in shuls around the world, we davened for rain, but we didn't yet start imploring God. So there's a bracha in our Amidah that we say three times a day, where we say V'tein bracha or V'tein talumatar. The V'tein talumatar is that we're asking God to send the rains. When we talk about Mashiva Ruach Morid HaGeshem, we're making a statement that God is the one who causes the rains. But when do we actually implore God to send the rains? It starts today in the land of Israel. We delay in the diaspora anywhere outside of the borders of Israel. We would only ask God for that rain and only change the bracha on the 4th or the 5th of December. And you'll see that note in your Siddur. And that's because of rainy season in the diaspora. This was kind of a prayer that came to us from Babylon, from Babel, and in Babylon, that is the accepted stand of everywhere outside of Israel, and therefore it is delayed until the 4th or the 5th of December. Interestingly enough, that date will change in a number of years' time, as it did a number of years ago. Every 100 years or so, there is a change to that a date, because the secular calendar is losing time and the Jewish calendar is much more perfect. So we've got a very interesting date today, the 7th of Cheshvan, where if you were in the land of Israel today, you would have switched over that bracha of V'tein Talumatar instead of saying V'tein Bracha. We still continue, though, in the diaspora right up until the 4th or the 5th of December, depending on which part of the day you're looking at. So go to your rabbis and your shuls and check out exactly which one you do, but there will be an announcement, I'm sure, in your particular community. It also happens to be the day today, the 7th of Cheshvan in 1933, that Rabbi Meir Shapira of Lublin, the founder of the daily Daf Yomi program of Talmudic study, passed away, and so today is his yahrzeit. When we fast forward to tomorrow, so we look at the 8th of Cheshvan in Jewish history, it was the date of the passing of Reb Yona of Gerona, or Gerona, in 1263. He was a 13th century scholar, lived in Spain, originally opposed to Maimonides' philosophical works. He later changed his views and vowed to travel to Maimonides' graveside to beg for forgiveness. He began the long journey, but passed away actually before completing it. He authored Shaarei Tshuva, a commentary on the halachic compendium of Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi, and the commentary on Ethics of Our Fathers, amongst other works. There are some who say that the day of his passing was either the 1st or the 28th of Cheshvan, but we mark it on the 8th of Cheshvan. The 9th of Cheshvan, which is tomorrow, is the day of the passing of the Rosh, the famous Rosh, in 1327. Reb Osher ben Yechiel, known as the Rosh, straddled two great spheres of Jewish diaspora of his time, Ashkenazi and the Sephardi communities. Was born approximately 1250 in West Germany, and he studied under the famed Reb Meir of Rottenburg. He was penniless, in exile, and a newcomer. His genius was extraordinary, and he passed away in Toledo on the 9th of Cheshvan in 5088 or 1327 of the Common Era.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Yes, Judaism 101.9 it is with Rabbi Michael Katz, and great to be back with you. If we now just take a look at other things that happened in and around this time, we spoke about a few things building up to Shabbos on Shabbat. The 10th of Cheshvan, it's the birth of Gad, the son of Yaakov Avinu, and Zilpah, the 7th of the 12 tribes, was born on the 10th of Mar Cheshvan, and he lived to be 125 years old. While we're talking about old people, let's go to the 11th of Cheshvan. The person who was known as the longest living human, or the longest lived human being, let's rather put it, of all time, the person who lived the longest of all time, was Methuselah, who passed away at the age of, now brace yourselves, 969 years. He lived 969 years. He passed away on the 11th of Cheshvan in the year 1656, which was 2105 before the Common Era. It was exactly 7 days before the beginning of the Great Flood. Yeah, we know the Great Flood began on 17th of Cheshvan. He passed away on the 11th of Cheshvan, which is coming up on Sunday. He was Adam's great-great-great-great-great-grandson, and the grandfather of Noah, of Noah. Isn't that amazing? The longest ever-lived human being died at 969 years. And if you're going to say, well, the years were different, I think not. We've got to think again. It was real years, and we're told that all the time. But that was the 11th of Cheshvan. But the 11th of Cheshvan is better known for being the date of passing of Rachel Imenu. Rachel, our mother, passed away in 1553 before the Common Era. She died in childbirth on the 11th of Cheshvan in the year 2208 or 1553 before the Common Era, and she gave birth to her second son, Binyamin. So it was also Binyamin's birth date, the 11th of Cheshvan, this kind of transitional date where the birth of Binyamin took place, Benjamin, the passing of Rachel Imenu. Now, Rachel was born in Mesopotamia, in Aram. Her father was Lavan, we know, the brother of Yaakov's mother, Rivka. Yaakov came to Lavan's home, fleeing the wrath of his brother Esav. He loved Rachel, worked for 7 years, we know, tending Lavan's sheep in return for her hand in marriage. Lavan deceived him, and on the morning after the wedding, he realized that he had married Leah, not Rachel. Lavan agreed to give him Rachel as a wife in return for another 7 years' labor. Well, it sounds like the trickery that's played by people in those neighborhoods where you never know what deal has been done, even to trick your own son-in-law with marrying, put your children at in harm's way kind of thing, and sort of disrupt the marriage of your daughter. Incredibly soulless kind of people who can do that. And we see it repeating itself so often, unfortunately. Now, Rachel was childless then for many years. Her elder sister gave birth to six sons and a daughter. And finally, she gave birth to Yosef in 1562, before the Common Era. And 9 years later, while Yaakov and his family were on the road to Yaakov's ancestral home in Hebron, after being away for 22 years, she gave birth to her second son, but she died sadly in childbirth. Yaakov buried her at the roadside in a place called Beit Lechem, not far from Yerushalayim. And the prophet Yirmiyahu says, Rachel mevaka al baneha, Rachel cries for her children, for they are gone into exile. And her tomb has served this as a place kind of linking between exile and redemption, because we understand that Rachel Mevaka, Rachel cries for her children when they left, when they went out into exile. So she was buried at the roadside, symbolic of her children leaving Yerushalayim and going into exile in Bovel, but then once again crying perhaps tears of joy as they return. And we have no doubt that that will happen soon when Mashiach will come, that Rachel Mevaka, she'll cry tears of joy to welcome her children back into Eretz Yisrael, back into Yerushalayim. Her tomb, we know, is visited by hundreds of thousands of people. For more than 35 centuries, it has stood there as this beacon of hope, of connection, of heritage, and the idea that our mother in Shamayim is thinking of us, is with us, at times of joy, at times of sadness, and will be there to greet us when we return, when we come back, when Mashiach comes. The 12th of Cheshvan, which is Monday, is, interestingly enough, the date on which Yitzhak Rabin, the commander-in-chief of the IDF during the Six-Day War, and later the Prime Minister of Israel, he was assassinated on this date in 1995. It's hard to believe that it was so long ago already. 1995, the assassination took place of Yitzhak Rabin, a terrible blot on the history of Israel, that he was assassinated by a Jew in Tel Aviv for a difference of opinions. Very, very sad, difficult for us to stomach kind of a story. And then if we go to Tuesday, the 13th of Cheshvan, by order of the Pope, the Talmud was burned in Venice on the 13th and 14th of Cheshvan in 1553. And the reason given was that the Talmud contained statements heretical to the Christian faith. And Venice boasted many famous Hebrew printing houses, including that of Daniel Bomberg, an Italian Gentile, who published the Talmud there during the years 1519 to 1523. And so the burning of the Talmud took place in Venice in 1553 by order of the Pope. Now, we've been thinking or talking here a lot about the comings and goings of the Jewish people in and out of Israel. Yes, if we think about Rachel Imenu, crying about the exile of her people, and then of course the idea of Jews coming in and going out, coming back, and Rachel crying those tears of joy to see her children back. It kind of leads one to think about the great significance of today. The idea of the 7th of Cheshvan being this day on which the furthest Jew would reach the furthest destination by foot, which would be a 15-day journey to the banks of the Euphrates, and that the entire Jewish people would respect that, would hold back on asking for rain to come and water their crops in Israel, to make themselves prosperous. And we think about the incredible, incredible sensitivity and recognition of each other that is actually built into the fabric of Judaism, of being Jewish. What it actually means to be Jewish is not only how hard we daven in shul and how much Torah we learn, but how considerate we are of others, how much concern we have for other people, for those around us. Yeah, Judaism is the very antithesis of narcissism. It is the very antithesis of psychopathic behavior. It is all the time trying to sensitize us to the fact that there are other people around us. There are people with needs, with concerns, with just wants, likes, dislikes around us. And Judaism tells us, instructs us, beckons us, pushes us to make sure that we are sensitive to the needs of others at all times. And putting the needs of others before ourselves is a real mark of Torah and of Judaism. We're the last ones on the agenda to be thinking about ourselves. The last idea of egocentricity, of all the time focusing on the needs and the concerns and respect for others. It's an incredible, incredible thing, and we learn it so profoundly and acutely and strongly on the 7th of Cheshvan, where everybody put at bay the watering of their own crops, the growth of their own produce, in other words, the growth of their own businesses and wherewithal and ability to make money, to function, to prosper, to flourish. It was all put on hold at in the consideration of the fact that there may be one last Jew traveling to the east, traveling on those camel's backs in order to get back home to the Euphrates River, to get to the area of Iran, Iraq, that kind of neighborhood, that there may have been one Jew traveling back. Everybody would put the prayers for rain, the pushing for rain, on hold until this day. It's a very, very deep and profound and important lesson for each and every one of us. If we're going to be doing anything in any way, it could be construed as harmful to anybody else, God forbid. But that's just a little bit inconsiderate of the needs and the thinking of others. You know, we are very quick today to make all sorts of quick statements. I think about it often, you know, people jump to making a statement on a WhatsApp group or making a statement in public or doing something or saying something without thinking for a moment how that is going to be construed, how it's going to be taken by others, how other people are going to think about it. We're all guilty of it. We do it not even a moment's notice, but a second's notice. We're reactionary. And if we would only pause for a moment and just think, hey, how are, never mind the other people on the group, but you know, sometimes these things are forwarded. How is that going to be read by others? The sensitivity of it. It was pointed out to me once that people on a shul group, for instance, were posting jokes. We quickly put a stop to it, but on a shul group it has no place, I guess. But some of them became a little bit offensive, and especially because a particular guy contacted me and said, you know, my secretary is not Jewish, and she has access to my WhatsApps or whatever, and she sees this, it's, we've got to think about those things. It can be insulting to somebody else who you didn't intend to actually see it. Now, that's just when we're talking about in the simple way of communication through WhatsApp messages. But how much more so is it when we think in a more macro kind of a way of our behavior in a store or our behavior in the street or our behavior as Jews? The nations of the world, the people around us, identify that that is a card-carrying member of the Jewish faith. This is a Jewish person. This is someone who has got the is on the mission of on the shlichus of God Almighty. We need to make sure that we behave in an impeccable fashion there too. Now, yeah, not only talking to you, I'm talking to me too. We all have these failings. We all have these issues, these problems. Think about how far Judaism tells us to go, that when it comes to concern for ourselves or concern for others, that we need to always be considerate. Considerate for others. If someone is traveling and is going to have rain fall upon their heads through the prayers that I am saying, I cannot and do not say those prayers in order to protect that individual. It's a deep and profound and important lesson. And if that's what we learn, and that's all we learn about Zion Cheshvan, that is what we need to learn, what we need to know. Be back with you right after this.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
While we're talking about things Jewish and things that we should be bearing in mind, there is a unique and wonderful opportunity that is going to present itself next week on Thursday evening. That's Thursday the 6th of November at 7:45 p.m., a program called Darkness to Light. Now, this is commemorating 87 years since Kristallnacht, and it is an insight into what has happened in Germany since Kristallnacht, since then. And amazingly, we're getting the perspective from Rabbi Yitzchak Mendel Wagner. Rabbi Wagner was the first post-Holocaust German native to be ordained as a rabbi. He currently serves as the rabbi and spiritual leader of Krefeld in Germany, where he was born and raised. Rabbi Wagner brings a unique perspective along with his own personal experience as he tells the story of German Jewry's tragic demise and unexpected rebirth, rising from the ashes of the Shoah, of the Holocaust, to its current state. It's the story of our people. It's the story of our survival. It is the inspiration that keeps Am Yisrael alive. You shouldn't miss it. If you want a book, please be in touch with Chabad House. Go on to our website at Chabad South Africa, you can book there, or be in touch with the Holocaust Center, the Holocaust and Genocide Center in Parktown. I think it is Parktown, yeah. And please come along for a very inspirational evening where Rabbi Wagner will address us live here in person. Yes, going to be here in South Africa for this special program and inspiration. And so, of course, as we're looking at times of inspiration, times of consideration, and times when we need to be a little bit more considerate and perhaps a little bit more focused on others. This is one of the fundamental lessons, of course, of Zion Cheshvan, of today, the 7th of Cheshvan, leading up to the end of the secular year and going into this time of November and then December and our school holidays. And of course, then the next great thing on the horizon is Chanukah, which is coming up towards the middle, late part of December. And we're looking forward, of course, to that as well. Lighting those menorahs, bringing light into the world, making a huge difference to a very, very different world. It's different already from what it was before Rosh Hashanah. It's going to be vastly different in every dimension, in every aspect. And, of course, we always have the opportunity to bring light to the darkness. And hopefully we can do that with Chanukah. But let's be considerate, let's think about others, and let's make sure that we have not lost the message of the 7th of Cheshvan, today's special message of how to be considerate, how to be concerned for others, even if it is at our own expense. Be back with you right after this.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Yes, this is Rabbi Michael Katz here with you. It is Judaism 101.9, and we have been spending some time thinking about and talking about events that have happened during this week, during this time, over the period of history of the Jewish people, going all the way back to Rachel Imenu, to Rachel, our mother, who lies at the side of the road, so to speak, in Beit Lechem. It is, if you think about it, just somebody asked the question, how's at the side of the road when you are talking about Yerushalayim? Well, it's the way out of Jerusalem going towards the east. It's not far from Yerushalayim, Beit Lechem. And that is where Rachel Imenu lies at the roadside in her grave. It was the first time that we have recorded in Torah the idea of putting up a matseva, putting up a tombstone. So Yaakov Avinu put up that tombstone not only to mark her grave, because she wasn't buried in the burial plot in Hebron with our other mothers and fathers, but there she was at a roadside to be a symbol of not only the protection of Rachel Imenu, but also of the hope for the future. That the same way as she is at the roadside and cries for the exile of our people, so she will be there at the roadside welcoming the exiles back home. And of course, we had emotional scenes when hostages were returned, and we think about them coming home, being welcomed by their mothers, by their fathers, with great emotion. It's something unspeakable and incredible and really awful all at the same time. But of course, thinking about the positive outcomes of the return of hostages, of the return of our people, of the return of the captives, it is, of course, one of the greatest predictions or prophecies of the time when Mashiach will come, that the exiles will return, that the exiles will be returned. And so hopefully, as we move forward in this time, post-Tishrei, after Tishrei, and we're now already in the going into the second week of the month of Cheshvan, that as we do that, we think not only of the times, the great times that we have had, but how we can apply all these messages to the times that are yet to come. And we look forward to Rachel Imenu crying for the return of her children from all over the world to Eretz Yisrael, coming for the Shalosh Regalim, coming for the pilgrim festivals, coming to behold the beautiful Beit HaMikdash as it stands, as will stand, in pride of place in Yerushalayim, in HaKodesh, in our holy city of Jerusalem. Please God, it should happen immediately with the coming of Mashiach, who we hope and pray will arrive very, very soon. So I want to wish you a great rest of the week, a great Shabbat up ahead, and look forward to being back with you same time, same place next week on another episode of Judaism 101.9.